This is the unemployed millennial setup right here. The comfortable setup.
Yeah, you called me yesterday.
Yeah.
And you told me the vision that you had for unemployed millennial, and I loved it.
Should I repeat it?
Yeah.
I was telling Emery, because there's so many podcasts nowadays, and we're talking about like renting out studios and stuff like that, because you have the ability to do that. I was like, you shouldn't even do that, you know, because your vibes and like the energy that you give off is like very comfy, and like, I don't want to have to worry about there being lights and cameras around all the time. And like, there's no better place to do it than in just like the most casual place, like a couch or a bed. I was saying, because of the Rick Rubin, like, as I saw a Rick Rubin podcast where, I think he was doing it with Lex Friedman, and it was like 2 hours into the podcast. Mm-hmm. It was like, it was only 15 minutes ago that I realized that there were no cameras and everything. Even now, like, even if it's a tensy bit, I feel like I have to perform.
Yeah, I was doing a podcast with Nick yesterday, and I was fully aware of the camera the whole time.
Especially if it's like a new person.
Yeah. Or a person you haven't seen or like talked to in a little while.
Yeah.
Okay, that would be building my world for you. You are our first episode. This is our second episode together. This is Ryan Eng Films.
Hello.
And our first episode, I think I get the most feedback from that, where people are like, especially at Creator Camp, they're like, they come up and they're like, that episode was so good. And it was. Really? You articulated world building like no other.
I feel like when people say these things, like, I don't believe it.
Yeah, but it's like they get into the specifics where I'm just like, oh yes, you know, yeah. Like the world building especially, and like the clothes, and like, you know, the specific detail. So yeah, Ryan is back on my Unemployed Millennial podcast.
Hello.
I would actually like you to be a recurring guest.
Yeah. Oh, that was another thing that I was saying. I was like, because when I first started like kind of thinking about your podcast, just like, you know, every now and then,
yeah,
when like you pop up in my mind, I was like, how is she gonna like travel from place to place and like interview new people all the time and like do what Danny is doing, our friend Danny Miranda? And I was like, and then I realized, like, you don't have to do that. You could just talk about this like different topics with the same people, and like in the comfort of your room or your bed or a couch. And like, I was even saying, like, hide the cameras, like, so the guests don't even know.
And that's crazy, because first of all, that's been my learnings of just like even podcasting with people that I know that are kind of like in the inner, just like on the outskirts of the circle.
Yeah.
It's not as comfortable for me, because I think I just like having conversations with people that I just think are interesting or already know. Mm-hmm. So I don't want to like constantly be having to like connect with like a new person.
You know what your art is going to be? I feel like, you know what your art is going to be? Is going to be like figuring out how to like, in the middle of a really awesome conversation with like this new person, figure out how to craft that, or how to like, you know, just like set up a camera and just like start talking and continue that conversation. I don't know. You know,
yeah, what sometimes we're having really amazing conversations, and ethically, I'm just like, I would love to record this, but I'm not going to. But then you gave me permission to record whatever. So I have random recordings of our conversations that are actually like really good. For a podcast episode, I'm going to go back and like listen to them all and then bring up different points.
Yeah. And then you could probably like cut into them.
Yeah. Okay, so you're at a very big transition point.
Yeah.
A lot of the themes of my podcast topics, because you even said, like, a lot of the world building that you did for me was crazy to have it articulated to me, because those are, like, the signs that I'm getting. Like, even Jade, I met Jade for the first time, Unjaded Jade, and she was, like, talking about, like, oh, like, how about if you didn't have cameras? Like, if you just were, like, talking with audio, and you said the exact same thing, which I almost started this podcast with like only audio, because I do think it is like you're just being perceived, like it just changes the dynamic. But we're both like YouTubers and we still feel that way, you know. So we have been talking a lot about feminine energy. And did we all talk about it for the first time when we went to your house? Like me, you and Chris. Was that the first
time? I think that was when it was like very, or like that we kind of saw that we related in that sense.
Yeah.
You know.
Because every single time I talk to you on the phone.
Yeah, it was.
Yeah.
Because we were talking to Chris.
Yeah.
And then Chris was like, I feel like I have masculine energy. and then I was like, I feel like I have feminine energy. And you're like, yeah, I see that.
I'm like, that's why we get along so well, I think.
Yeah, yeah.
But I think, first of all, I admire the self-awareness. And also, I think there's such a taboo of, like, femininity, masculinity. And, like, if you're a man, you want to be masculine. And if you're, like, a woman, you want to be feminine. Where, in reality, like, everyone has both. And I feel like you just, like, own that you have, like, feminine energy and you relate to it.
Yeah. But it took me so long to get there. Mm-hmm. And I feel like sometimes I almost, like, admire... I found myself admiring a lot of females that like embrace it so well. And I'm like, I'm not there yet.
Oh, like feminine energy.
Yeah. I'm like, I'm not there yet. I need to like learn even like, okay. When you told me about Jade, I was like, okay, who is this person? And I started looking at Jade and I'm like, I'm not there yet. But like that, she was able to build a world around that energy.
Hmm. Do you think she embodies feminine energy?
I don't know. But, like, at least that's the vibes that I get.
Like, what? We're talking about Unjaded Jade. I just met her for the first time.
I only watch, like,
yeah.
One reel and scroll through her YouTube channel.
Well, I think you have a really unique talent to look at someone and then see the world that they're trying to build. Like, do you have that vision for her? Or, like, what did you see?
I mean, kind of. But also, like, I don't want it to be, like, I have, like, superpowers. Yeah. And, like, I can, you know what I mean? Like,
I think it's just a very strong intuition, maybe.
Yeah.
But it is honestly impressive because I don't want to talk. Oh, you should meet him, by the way, too.
Okay.
But I don't usually want to talk to people or, like, I don't usually feel like I need to talk to people about, like, my channel because I'm just like, you don't get it, but you do.
Yeah. I don't know. I realized that it was kind of like dangerous to, I mean, I appreciate that people like see that in me of like, I can see other people's world where I could see through the, you know, like judging the book by its cover and I could see through it. But obviously like, I don't think any human can like see someone it's real and YouTube videos and go like, I know who you're gonna be.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I feel like I have to get to know her, but I was saying like when I did scroll through, like I don't know. I was like, I respect those people because I want to have that confidence. Mm-hmm. But like I want to try to like share that energy with the world. But for so long or so much of my life I was like kind of suppressing it or like because I was like I need to be a man, you know. And I see how my dad would act and then I would see how people in media perceive like tell you what a man should be and I was like I shouldn't want to be like that or like I shouldn't want to have feminine energy, you know. And even like when I first got into my first relationship we like did this little test where like who wears the pants in the relationship and then I was like obviously I wear the pants in the relationship, I'm the fucking man, you know. And then like we did the test and then you know my ex she was like so like you know she's so strong. And obviously, like, in retrospect, like, she obviously wore the pants in the relationship. And she's like, I think I wear the pants in the relationship. I was like, no. In the most, like, insecure, like, man way.
Wow.
And I think it wasn't until the past maybe year and a half that I really started to fully embrace it. And now I feel insecure that I still have that masculine energy left within me and that I'm like accidentally spewing it sometimes or like the toxic masculinity, like I'm accidentally spewing that, you know. I'm really scared. I think that's what I'm scared of now, whereas like many years ago or for the majority of my life, I was scared of not, or I was scared of showing the feminine side or the softer side of me. Now I'm just like scared that that toxic insecurity is still within me and I like need to get rid of it still, you know? I don't know if I'm making any
sense. No, I think that makes complete sense. Okay, I want to go off a few points here. Like, yeah. Maybe first we can think about, like, what about the feminine energy or, like, just learning about it or what traits did you most relate to? And then I think you saying, like, that's what you're scared of is, like, spewing the toxic masculinity. Because I think you see it, that in a lot of people, too, or, like, maybe a lot of yeah. men.
Yeah.
And so you're, yeah. like, constantly, like, oh, like, this is a result of, like, that. So you see it so often, mm-hmm. and I know you do. So then you're just like, oh, I don't want to be that way.
Yeah. So what are you saying? Like,
I think that's why you're scared of it, but because you just like recognize it now or like there's like a consciousness, yeah. like an awareness. But OK, so going back.
I was going to say, yeah. like, I'm scared of that. And like I admire the other thing, which is like I admire the other thing, which is like. We were just listening to the Beyonce song or like, I don't know.
Which song?
Be Alive. Or like, I'm just going to use Jade as an example.
Yeah, go for okay? it.
But I don't even know. I'm making this assumption.
Yeah. So I literally just told him he should meet Jade. So that's like yeah. the basis of their relationship. And I met her for the first time. I want
people to know that I'm just making an assumption
yeah.
here.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But like, I like try not to be that. Toxic masculinity, but and I admire that that strength, and like I want to be that, but I feel like I'm not there. So
how so?
I don't know.
Like you mean for?
But what do you mean? How so? Like that? I feel like I'm not there.
Yeah, in terms of masculinity, or like
femininity, expressing the energy, or like embracing it so well, you know, in the way you dress and in the way you. Carry your life and even in the way that you maybe post stuff on Instagram. So I don't know.
Okay. And then what traits of learning about feminine energy did you like most relate to and like was eye opening for you? Cause I feel like this was like low key kind of eye opening for you. Like it's like in a yeah. lot of conversations that we talk about. And I think you're carrying it to like a lot of your different like circles or works that you're yeah. doing.
You don't have to be the dominant one, you don't have to be the guy that makes all the decisions or the guy that, you know, has to take the lead all the time or, you know, the manly macho dude to be powerful, you know? But it's a different type of strength. It's like knowing yourself. It's like being independent, setting boundaries and like allowing people maybe allowing other people to make decisions and stuff like that, but like making sure that it doesn't, you know, fuck with what you want to do and with your values. Like Waymond from Everything Everywhere is an amazing example of that, where his wife Evelyn is such a strong individual and is so like headstrong on what she wants. And Waymond is totally cool with letting her wear the pants in the relationship. But once it starts to screw with his values, like he's the one that makes the decision to get the divorce because he's not getting what he wants out of the relationship. So he's the one setting the boundaries, but he's also the one being kind and being optimistic about the world and trying to get Evelyn to see that too. But also like, being on the sideline when she's the one that goes and saves the day, you know? And I don't know. I saw that as very appealing because I tried to be the other and I just wasn't, and I just couldn't, you know?
I think it's kind of empowering even like for me to see you have that perspective. Cause I think even in a lot of YouTube, like I just did a podcast with Megan Klein who talked about like, masculine operating in masculine energy is very like data driven. It's like telling people what to do versus like, I think for the YouTube space, it's like following your intuition on, oh, I think this trend will eventually do well versus just like taking whatever is trendy right now and then like molding yourself to fit around that. So I feel like I try to just do like a lot of intuitive stuff. So it's cool to see you kind of take the same way of operation. Cause I think that's also extremely powerful, but it's just like kind of a silent power.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a silent power. You could be the strongest person in the room, you know, but that doesn't mean that you have to make all the decisions, or that doesn't mean that it needs to be shown, you know?
And I think, at least from like an outsider perspective, for like a lot of the work that you do, like in the circles of influence that you have, like Creator Camp, it's like a lot of what you're doing is like you're setting the boundaries for like other people, and like you're like trying to make sure that it's like good for the group and the community.
Yeah, I find that a lot of my roles, at least in the business that we run, And I'm very grateful because they all listen and they all, you know, respect my decisions and or like my opinions. But a lot of what my role has been is like to get the other guys to understand what it's like to be in someone's shoes like me, who maybe doesn't have the voice yet, you know. But, you know, especially like when you're running a business and everything's so exciting and fun and like
fast,
you tend to like, you're like a bull, like running straight towards your target, but you can like knock down people along the way and with no like ill intention. Like you're just doing it because it's fun and it's exciting and you want to help people, but you don't realize that you're knocking other people over while you're reaching that goal. And to like kind of get them to understand that and be aware of it and be cautious of it. That's kind of like a role of like, my type of personality. I think that's where I fit really well in business, at least, you know.
You make like really beautiful analogies. One time I was talking to Chris and he was like, because he's very sensitive and like I'm a sensitive person. You know what I'm talking about?
I think I know.
With the prism?
Prism? No.
Okay, what did that spark in your brain?
Because I relate to Chris. Chris is the CEO of Creator Camp, which is the events company that we run. And Chris is like the softest, most... he's the most kind person. And all he wants to do is kind of like help. I think he has like a very kind soul.
I think so too.
You know? And that's amazing for, I think, running a type of business that we're running, which deals with people all the time and which like literally creates spaces for people. It's amazing for that. But sometimes with like relationships and with like love life or like things like that, it like hurts a lot more. You know, with like an artist, it just like hurts deep inside. Whereas like maybe a more business minded, data driven person is like, there are more women in the world. Like, it's okay. I can move on. And maybe they're very prescriptive, you know, but for someone like Chris and myself, Chris just, I don't even know if I should say that, but Chris was going through some complications with a relationship that he had. And he was just feeling very down. And I know exactly what that feels like the pain in your heart and feeling like you can't get out of bed or feeling like that's the only thing you could think about and knowing that you have work to do, but you can't do the work because it just hurts so bad.
Yeah.
I don't know what analogy he was telling you about, but the analogy that I was telling him was like, is like that emotion that you feel is actually like, is, because he was beating himself over. He's like, why do I have to feel this way? Like, I don't like this. It's like, this is like actually a superpower that you have to feel that way. And to be able to feel emotions so heavily, it's a curse, but it's also like the strongest. It's like you're the strongest Marvel superhero, but your power is so strong that you could destroy yourself with it. So you need to learn how to control that because you're one of the most powerful people in the world because you can feel these emotions. But if you don't have control over that, if you don't set boundaries with yourself, you're going to destroy yourself and everything around you. But if you can control it and put that energy, maybe not towards a toxic relationship, but towards
like a community,
towards a community or towards a mission or towards art, or business, like you're the one that's going to change the world, you know? But that was an analogy that I was thinking about when...
That's really beautiful, though. That reminds me. So I started watching Avatar because when I bought that camera, the day...
I want to talk about Avatar.
Okay, so do I. But that reminds me... Okay, so I bought that camera because I was talking to the guy at B&H and he was like, oh, you're from Alaska? The water tribe is based on the Inuits in Alaska.
We're talking about Avatar, The Last Airbender, okay, not the blue people.
Yes, The Last Airbender. And I watched an episode that was like... I was watching it when I was last year, so I haven't caught up. Yeah. But one of the last episodes I watched was like about the lightning episode with like Zuko.
Redirecting lightning.
Yeah. And it's exactly described like how you just described, like the most powerful thing where he's like, if you can't channel the lightning, because
Cause it's such a powerful bending.
It's like the power. Most powerful in the fire bending, whatever.
Yeah. But you basically can't control the lightning. You're just guiding it.
And also he was like, if you can't control yourself, you'll destroy everything around you because like it's so powerful that it'll just like catch everything on fire.
That's a beautiful, like, how could the writers of like a kids show come up with such a beautiful analogy for that? I don't know, that's just so
okay. I do want to talk about Avatar, but maybe I want to go back one bit because maybe this can close out the feminine energy, but...
It'll be a theme throughout.
Yeah, okay. And I feel like you, again, more so than, like... I really admire how you just... You're so self-aware of it, and you really, like, process it in your brain, and you've been implementing boundaries.
Yeah.
Can you speak a little bit of how you're doing that, or how that process has been?
That's huge. Yeah. For example, like, I mean, the easiest way to explain it would be like, it's just like saying no, or just like, for example, like, I think that I'm very much like a people pleaser, or like, I think a couple of years ago, I was very easily convinced to do things, or like, I would be scared to speak out on things because like, I was scared that I would hurt someone's feelings and stuff like that. And then that just automatically put me on a level below whoever I was talking to, because I'll just say yes, yes, yes.
Yeah.
And then I'm no longer respecting myself.
Yeah.
You know?
Because anytime you put someone on a pedestal, they're looking down on you.
Exactly. Exactly. And you're giving them permission to do that too, you know? And the more you say yes to things that you don't want to do, and the more you are not just honest, the more it might build up, right? And there might be resentment that builds up. I can give this as an example because I'm running like two businesses at once. I actually ran three businesses at once at one point. And I know that my heart is in making videos, is in making art and films. And I think that I didn't fully believe in my ability to make films, and there were other opportunities coming along that just kind of like took me away from me expressing myself, because we now had Creator Camp and we now had an agency that we were gonna run, and those were making money. And I was like, man, I should put my focus there. All my friends were building this together. Isn't this the dream that we like wanted all along, was to build together and live together and do all this stuff together? And as I spent like the last 9 months working on Creator Camp and building our second event and all of these things, I found myself uploading a video every 4 months, which is like, and I started feeling suffocated. Like, I actually think I was expressing to Eli at the time, a couple months before Creator Camp 2 happened. And I was like, I'm not feeling good. And he was like, I feel like your voice isn't being heard because you're a filmmaker and you don't have the ability to make films right now because you're traveling for business and you're like doing all of these things for the business, but nothing for yourself. And I think that really kind of hit me because I was like, man, like that's exactly how I feel. I feel like I'm being silenced. And I actually feel like all of this narrative of all my friends going like, we should live together and we should focus on building the business and like not our YouTube channels. It like fucked with my mind because like that's where I wanted to be. I didn't necessarily. And then over time, I was like, man, I should really set my boundaries with the businesses because filmmaking always comes first. That's what got me to where I am today. That's what I'm literally making a living from my videos. Why?
Shout out to IMI.
Yeah. A nonprofit. By the way, my YouTube videos make zero money, but I've been very blessed to have a creator nonprofit, like believe in me enough to give me the opportunity to make a living from YouTube. And they really believe in me.
It's just a testament of how much people believe in you.
Yeah. And we can talk about that and the synchronicities there. But once I started making that shift and setting the boundaries of the business, I called Chris, I called Max, I called Simon. I was like, guys, I feel like I don't want to build resentment and I don't want to be angry at you guys. And in order to do that, I need to focus on what I think I love the most, you know? And I had to like say the uncomfortable things of like, I don't even know if I necessarily want to live together. Like I kind of want my own space because I need my own space to create. And I'm very lucky that they're all very like understanding of that. And it's just saying no. It's like people aren't going to be mad, you know? Actually, what is worse is not setting those boundaries and letting the resentment build up to the point where the relationship just shatters. And there's no honesty because you kept everything inside. And once you realize that there's a problem, like it's on, and it sucks because you're the person that was being pushed around and you could feel bad about yourself. And you should give yourself some grace because like, yeah, you were the one working your ass off and being kind of pushed around.
And not appreciated.
Not appreciated. And that really fucking sucks. But now that you see that problem, now it's all on you to figure it out and to push through it. No one else is going to figure it out for you. And it sucks. Like that's because you just want to feel sorry for yourself. And like, and like, it does fucking suck, you know, because you feel like you should get an apology or you feel like you should, you know, others should help you out now. I don't know if I'm explaining this.
That actually makes a lot of sense.
But that's not coming. You know, that shit's not coming. Mm-hmm. You have to figure it out yourself and make your life better. Once you realize it's everyone else pushing you around and it's everyone else's fault, now it's your fault and it's on you to figure it out.
I actually feel like that's extremely valuable to hear. Yeah. You know, because you can just feel sorry for yourself, but where does that get you? And then also, if you just take extreme like ownership of the situation, then it is up to you to like place those boundaries. And
yeah, and I think a lot of it is like I'm also blessed because I have a awesome mom.
Yeah,
you know that I'll be like moping around. My mom will like, get up. She'll be like, get up. She's like, you're a filmmaker, Ryan. She's like, what are you going to do here? Look at you.
She's like, your mom's amazing.
She's like, look at you, Ryan. You're sitting here. You could be making your videos, but you could be going to sleep right now or exercising, but you're just sitting here.
That's so cute.
I'll be like, oh, fuck you. Like, I don't want to say you're right. So I'll just go upstairs and like do my work, you know?
I think you have a really beautiful relationship with your mom.
My mom is awesome. Yeah, my mom is awesome. And I, I don't know why, but recently I've been thinking a lot more about award shows. Aww. And like, because I'm working on a film right now about Everything Everywhere, or like the history of Asian Americans in Hollywood, and like the ending is like
key. It's insane. Well, I haven't seen the ending.
Winning an Oscar, and he's like, "Mom, I won an Oscar." Aww. And then I was like, "How would I shout out my mom when like I get that award?" Even like I just got accepted into Buffer Fest too, which is like a YouTube film festival. And I was like, "What if I win an award there?" I was like, "I'm not good at like speeches or anything, or like public speaking, but
you are very articulate. I think you would be really good at that."
I think I just need to practice speaking in front of the crowd. But I was like, if I was there, I was like, you know, I could only thank one person. It has to be my mom.
Wow.
But yeah, she's, I'm going to hang out and go shopping with her today when you go to Govball. But yeah, she is starting to see the world too. And like, I just showed her my latest film, and this is after setting my boundaries and, spending a lot of time understanding where I want to put my focus, and then intentionally putting my focus into my films. And I showed you like the first 2 minutes of my film.
It was incredible.
I showed it. Thank you.
Next level.
Thank you. I showed it to my mom. My mom, and I have I might have a brand deal on this one. My mom was like, "They're only paying that much for this." She's like, "Next time, no more. She's like, "You're either doing your Patreon or you're not putting anything on there. She's like, "This can't be ruined." And before, you know, she's like, she's an Asian parent, immigrated here when she was 18 years old with like $17 in her pocket. And she's telling me to not take thousands of dollars.
Yeah.
Because she's like, "Your potential is just so much higher." That's the other thing with setting boundaries is that you get to understand your potential too.
Mm.
And the ultimate risk is not in, like, for me, I could have played it safe and focused on the businesses and I would have been fine. I might even be wealthier than the path that I want to go down now. But that's not where I reach my full potential, you know? And I see it in filmmaking. I don't know if I don't want to bring down my entrepreneurial, because I still think I could run a business, but the filmmaking is where it's at. And
that's where your heart is.
That's where my heart is. Yeah. And I think setting your boundaries and all this stuff, you just start to understand your potential
and your own value.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think there is really something to removing your presence too. If that's like the worst case scenario, you lay your boundaries and then people like don't accept them, then you also just have to be fine like completely going alone or doing your own thing.
But then people value your time
exactly,
more.
Exactly, yeah.
People value your time more. People value, for me, it's like even if I say no to this integration, like people will value a spot on my YouTube channel more, you know? Yeah, it's just like, learning to say no is just, it's so tough in the beginning, but it changes everything, you know, it changes everything.
Can we talk about how you are getting signs and synchronicities from the universe, even in the sponsorship, or just like saying no is like telling the universe like what you want, or even like how you want to operate with like flexibility or just like prioritizing the art?
Yeah.
You were getting signs.
Oh, man, yeah. I actually think my whole my next YouTube video is like this synchronicity, because I'll just spoil everything here.
Okay.
off the top of my head, I can't remember like all of it, but like I'll just talk about the big picture.
I have some of them written, I think, from one of our conversations. You said we both read the Rick Rubin book.
That whole book, The Creative Act, is like a whole synchronicity.
Yeah, in itself, me too.
You know,
when I brought it to New York, she asked me, I was 2 pounds overweight, so I had to take a book out, and I took that book out, and then I read like the first 96 pages on my flight, and I was like, oh my gosh.
Yeah, that was a whole synchronicity in itself. I mean, talk about the whole setting boundaries thing, and like, I think also another theme in my life lately has been understanding your full potential, because not even to be egotistical for a second, but I'm like seeing my development as an artist and seeing what is being built with the YouTube new wave and what is being built as is my growing as an artist. And I'm like, this might be fucking crazy. This might be crazy, but there might be a day where I could win an Oscar. Like, not that that even matters. Not that that's even the goal of being a filmmaker, because it's not. But I was like, there might be a day where I get to be in that room in LA, like with all of my idols, mm-hmm. with the Daniels, and sitting there and potentially winning an Oscar or being nominated for an Oscar.
I fully believe in that for you too.
Thank you. It's like there can be a chance that can happen. And it's been a conversation in my mind constantly of like, I could be an artist. I could be an artist. But again, the businesses were thriving and we were getting money here and there. And I was like, but I don't know if I don't know that Oscar thing, that being an artist, that's so crazy. That's so like, and I think the more I dove deep into YouTube and art, the more I was like, that's so crazy. Cause it only happens to like fucking like 24 people, you know? I was like, that's not me. But like the more I thought about it, the more I'm like, that could be me though. That could be me. And I think the Rick Rubin book and watching Everything Everywhere All at Once win all those Oscars and seeing people that looked like me achieve that. And all at the same time, I wanted to make a film about Asian Americans in Hollywood. That was a whole synchronicity in itself. And just to dive deeper into it, for the creative act, Rick Rubin, at the very end of the book, I'm going to spoil this, but at the very end of the book, he was like, the art should always come first. And it might seem like the most like simple thing, and maybe to someone else it might not mean anything, but for me, I was like, that makes so much sense. I get what you're saying. I get it. Like, and what he was saying was the career, the money, and the art are two completely separate things. Like, they're just two completely separate things. You can't pair that together, and you can never compromise your love for art and what you're making for
money.
Like, never. That's how important it is to express yourself purely. And if that means you need to get a job to support your filmmaking or your painting, that's what you got to do. But money and art are two completely separate things. And if you can make money from your art, then sick. Like, you're living the fucking life. And I took a step back and I looked at my life right now, and I'm working on this movie and everything. And I'm like, hold on, why am I compromising my art to try and make money from this integration? Like, why am I focusing on the businesses so much? Because I can literally make a living doing my art and just focusing on making the best shit possible right now. Why am I focused on all this other shit? Or why am I worried about all this other shit? And I think right after that, I was like, okay, it's time to like see if this theory of becoming a full-time filmmaker is possible.
Have you had moments where like the money has compromised your art?
No. Interesting enough. Like, no. Because we're in such a lucky period of time right now where... What do you mean in terms of money? Oh, are you saying because a lack of money or like...
Or like you're prioritizing the money over...
Oh, art? For sure. My last video. I rushed it because I wanted to get a Storyblocks integration out, and it was pretty good. But I was bummed with the ending because I could have spent more time on the ending. And my manager was like, you should be uploading this. You should be uploading this. I was like, okay. And then it was compromised. And I can't watch that video because I don't like it.
Because of the
ending.
Yeah.
Because I didn't put enough effort. And then people are telling me like, no one's going to realize, no one's going to realize. I'm like, I realize it. Like, and I knew it could have been better.
Yeah.
Like I knew for a fact that this could have been better and I didn't make it better.
It is interesting because like there are definitely two sides that you could take. It's like sometimes like sponsorships allows me to like create a video that I wouldn't have done before. So then it kind of like lays a framework for just like a different type of video.
For sure.
And then I'm grateful for it.
But it has to be the right sponsor.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But then, yeah, also like sometimes it kind of just like if you have like a really cool idea and then you just like put a sponsor in the middle of it and it's like something that you see is like really representative of like your brain and crafting like this message that you wanted to get across. And then there's just like this ad in the middle of it that's going to be there and a part of that story forever. It's just kind of like,
Yeah, it's like there's a credit card ad in the middle of this thing. Like, what? Like, and but the thing is like, that's how I feel. I also understand, like, I was talking to Nathaniel Drew the other day, like, a couple weeks ago, and he was like, I realized that it was, like, that's what, sometimes that's what you just need to do.
Exactly.
And, like, it also is, like, that's, that, I just want to preface by saying, like, I'm on one side of the extreme. I have the privilege of having this nonprofit.
Yeah.
IMI, Independent Media Initiative. They're fucking awesome. I have the blessing of them, you know.
Like, they're giving you that ability to focus on the art over money. So I don't have
to. They want me to do that and nothing else. And, if that's not the universe telling me to, to go down this path, I don't know what is, you know?
Yeah.
So, for me, personally, I'm taking that route of pure artist, trying it, you know? Only working with the sponsors that care about me and like understand my craft and that match my brand and things that I'm actually using. And then like, other than that, like I'm not going to try to sell my soul because my art is too important. And it might be an egotistical thing. It's a very self-centered thing, but I don't know. That's all of YouTube too, you know?
That's true.
So
Tyler, the creator, Rap Caviar. What did you learn from that?
Yes. By the way, I want to talk about an analogy that I use that helped me understand what art is so well, so fucking well. I need to say this, and I'm probably gonna make a video on it. But yeah, I was just like working on my video, making dinner, and I was like to listen to podcasts or like listen to music, but I was like, maybe I should do something different this time. And I remembered that we had wanted, as a group of friends, we had wanted to watch this documentary about Tyler, the Creator, on this show on Hulu called Rap Caviar. And I love Tyler, so I was just totally down to listen to whatever it was. And this, again, this goes back to the whole boundary setting thing. He had done the exact, he had gone through the exact same things that I'm going through right now when he was making Flower Boy, which is the album that got him to this artistic superstardom that he is at right now. And the whole documentary is about his journey from being this, people seeing him as this like immature, silly rapper who was more of a spectacle comedy guy than an actual good producer and rapper. And long story short, like he was talking about how during his earlier albums, he was also doing TV shows and stuff like that.
Like
and
MTV
he was
or
doing,
something.
Yeah, he was doing other things that was making him money. And that was building his brand. And people would go up to him on the streets. It's like, I loved you on that show. You're so funny. You're so funny. It's like, damn. Nobody sees me.
For my art.
For my art. Nobody sees me for the thing I care about the most. And he was like, never again. Never. That's never going to happen again. And he was talking to Pharrell. And Pharrell was like, make something undeniable. Understand your art and why you're making every step. don't just do it for the flashy shit. You can make it as flashy as the flashy shit, but like make it undeniable, make it meaningful, and you'll be cemented in, you'll get the respect that you want. And he's like, okay, no more. He dropped all of the comedy stuff. He was like, I'm not going to be funny for like 2 years. And then for 2 years, he just locked himself in his room, Airbnb to Airbnb, understanding music composition, understanding the art of music, surrounding himself around other artists that were successful, listening to things that he never ever listened to. And that's when Flower Boy came out, and then Igor, and then Call Me If You Get Lost, which just like back to back to back legendary albums, all got nominated for a Grammy, two won Grammys. Now he's like cemented. He has the respect that he deserved. And it's like he saw the potential. He knew that he could be a Grammy award winning artist, but he never gave himself the permission to fully go into it. But luckily enough, he had the right people around him, and he had seen that maybe he didn't set the boundaries right, or maybe he wasn't focusing on the thing that he cared about the most. And it was crazy because I was listening to this documentary of one of my favorite artists at a time where I was going through the exact same things, and I was making the exact same realizations, you know? So I was freaking out when I was listening to that.
Yeah. You were like, this is synchronicity.
Yeah. Yeah. And I called you and I was like, you got to listen to this. You got to watch this.
Because I'm at the same place kind of too, where I'm just like, oh, I want to explore new things like with my podcast, but it's like what I get, like I can get sponsorships and whatever on my YouTube channel. Mm-hmm. And a lot of my signs have been like you going through the exact same thing.
Like you
setting your boundaries, like other people like wanting to focus, like even Kelly Stamp, she's like, she has a second channel now because she feels like she can speak her full.
I was looking for that. I couldn't find
it. It's like Whataburger. I don't know what it's called. Queen or something. Because she's like found, she wants to talk about like her religion.
Yeah.
And she doesn't want to do that on a platform that she started talking about how to grow on YouTube. Mm-hmm. So it's like a lot of these signs to me are just like, even if it's not the most successful thing or like the thing that's making the most money, it's like you just have to kind of, a lot of people around me are like leaping and trusting that the net will appear.
Yeah. By the way, on the topic of maybe religion, like I used to be such a nihilist. And not that I'm religious now, but I'm much more open to the idea of it.
Yeah.
And I'm much more open to the idea of the universe just working with you, for you. And you just need to trust it. Even if things aren't working out for you right now, it's like something out there is just testing you to make sure that you're up for the job, you know? And that's where I'm much more open to it now than I was 2 years ago when I started YouTube. When I started YouTube, I was like, man, nothing matters. I was like, this sucks. You know, life sucks.
Let's talk about that, because I feel like you've also made a transition, and you described yourself as cynical. And then recently you were telling me that you were watching the movie Taxi Driver.
Oh yeah.
What did that teach you?
By the way, all this media that I'm consuming right now, I'm so in love with the media that I'm consuming.
I've been loving hearing about it. Like, you will tell me what you've learned, and I was like, I'm just like, wow.
I'm making a conscious effort to even just every day surf through my YouTube videos and literally don't recommend this YouTube channel to me.
That's so important, to, like, actually.
Give YouTube the directions of what I want to watch. This is what I want. And right now I got my guilty pleasure of like Avatar, The Last Airbender.
Wait, yeah,
I also play Overwatch. So I like watching Overwatch videos. I got those, but I also have Rick Rubin podcast pop up. I have Tyler, the Creator music, you know, from their fan, like the whole fan base makes like Tyler, the Creator style music.
So you're even building your world in the world that you're watching.
Yeah, you have to, I feel. Yeah. And then also because so much of my research for my videos is surfing on YouTube.
Yeah.
So I'm getting a lot of documentaries and stuff like that. So, and movies and like analysis videos, and I fucking love it. I fucking love it. So on that note of like the media that I'm consuming right now, all of it, I'm being trying to be much more intentional about yeah. it. You know, because if you're not, YouTube will literally own you. Like, they will own you. You will just be on an infinite, like, death scroll, yes. you know? And I've been in those situations, you know?
I think a lot of, like, even countering that, because I call that, like, TikTok brain, even though it's, like, YouTube. Yeah. It's, like, you can become an AI person and just following and doing everything for the algorithm that is provided for you instead yeah. of being conscious. I think an active solution is literally to, like, build out your own world.
Again, it's, like, you see the problem.
Yeah.
Okay, you see the problem with YouTube. Like, what are you going to keep doing? You're just going to be sad over it? Are you gonna like just like keep criticizing YouTube? Which is, if you look back at my YouTube videos, you will see that I was in this like moping period of yeah. like criticizing YouTube, which yeah, there are a lot of problems with YouTube. Maybe it's good to acknowledge it, but after a certain point, it's like, yo, you need to,
it's like the ownership thing about it.
Yeah, you need to do. I remember getting very scared because and this will tie back to the taxi driver thing.
Yeah.
Because I got really scared because I clicked on my YouTube channel and it was so fucking scary because I had gone on a binge of watching news.
Mm. Like,
and it wasn't even like good news about current events and yeah. stuff like that. It was literally news of like murders.
Yeah.
Of, like, people, you know, killing themselves, of, like, beatings and stuff like that. And it wasn't even current news. It was, like, stuff that happened 10, 15 years ago. It's, like, YouTube recommended wow. this, like, it was just so bad for you. Wow. It was so bad for you. And I saw myself getting deeper and deeper. I was, like, and then every time I saw it, it was like immediate reaction was don't recommend this. Don't recommend this. Don't recommend this.
So that's actually a really good advice to actively like do that yeah. because that's been my Twitter recently. Like I usually love Twitter, but in the last like 2 months, it's just become this like just the stuff I'm reading. It was actively putting, I was telling you this, it was like yeah. kind of putting me into a depressive, like shamed mood. And so I was just like, man, I need to get off of this.
It should be a flex, honestly.
Yeah.
It should be a flex. For people to show off their Instagram feeds
yeah.
and for it to be useful shit.
And you not know? Just like bikini pictures or like, yeah. yeah.
I was very, very thankful too because my Instagram feed is either my friends.
Yeah.
Or.
Mine's all like spirituality stuff.
Yeah, I like spirituality mine. Stuff. We'll share things. Yeah. Like my saved stuff are all like, I have like Neil deGrasse Tyson talking about how, you know, and then I have Virgil Abloh. I have, you know, sculptures that I liked, art that I enjoyed, poetry. Yeah. And it's like, yeah, like, I mean, like the internet's not going anywhere.
Yeah.
The internet's only going to consume more of your life.
This is only going to become more important.
Yeah. So like you better figure it out, you know. But on the note of taxi driver, because yeah. this will tie all back to it. I was watching one of the most famous art house movies to have ever been made by Martin Scorsese, a movie called Taxi Driver by Martin Scorsese. And for those of you, like people who don't know what it is, it's a film about a taxi driver who chooses in New York City, who chooses to drive in at night, in midnight, and drive people around at midnight. And he's like a Vietnam War veteran, and he has like PTSD. It's not shown, but it's implied through the way that he acts that he has a lot of mental health issues, and he's lonely. And I don't live in New York City, but I can see it with certain people, and I could see how New York City can own you and consume you if you're not careful. Mm-hmm. And it could be a beautiful place. New York City could be this beautiful place where you, you know, go to the, we were just at the beach. Yeah. We were just like, you know, going around the shops and hanging out with friends. And like, you could, there's so much to do. You could go take yoga classes. Yeah. You could own your life in New York City. Or
I can give you the contrast of my experience yesterday on the way to K-Town.
Yeah, yeah.
It was like I went on the subway and there was like a man who had acid burns, yeah. And he like couldn't even like, he just like had a sign and everyone is just like ignoring him. And I'm like, I don't have any money. Like, and then going up, there's just like a man like begging for money again. Like, I don't have any money. Like no one is ever, he's like blind. Like everyone is passing him. There's like super loud singer, like in the subway, that's just like chaotic. And he's just like screaming at the top of his lungs. It doesn't have to be good. You just walk up and there's like a swarm of people where you just like feel like you're just like dodging everyone to get out of the way. So I feel that for him.
So it could feel so suffocating.
Yeah. Too, so you suffocating.
Know? So the main character, Travis Bickle, he's not in the best, you know, he's not in the best like area. He's also not like having a good time with life. He's just lonely. Like there's a quote in the film. He's like, I'm God's lonely man. Hmm. And he keeps seeping deeper and deeper into his own depression. And like he sees all the problems with New York, like the gangbangers, the hookers, the mobs, the, you know, the crowd, the crowdedness, the claustrophobia of New York City, which again, like was same with the internet, right? Like you see all the problems with the internet, and maybe he's right. Maybe it is not good, but I was reading comments on like an edit that someone did of Taxi Driver. And he's like, Travis is his own worst enemy because he sees all these problems, but he does nothing about it. And he chooses to only see the bad things. And he just seeps deeper and he just sinks deeper and deeper into this misery. And he's like, man, the world is fucked. The world is fucked. And like all the other taxi drivers try to hang out with Travis and he like makes the situation awkward and like weird because he's so hateful and he's so annoyed with the world. And he doesn't even realize that he's the one that's like making things awkward.
Yeah.
You know? And I was like, I could end up like this guy if I'm not careful.
See, the self-awareness in you is like so good.
It's scary.
Yeah.
Well, I'm blessed that I realize these things through the media that I consume.
Yeah, like through art.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm very, very lucky. And I was like, I have to be more optimistic. Like that movie scared, like I watched it when I was in college. I was like, I don't fucking understand this art house shit. You know? And then I watched it again. And wow. Like, and then I watched it for a third time this time around. And I was like, oh, this shit scares me. Like this is so, like I could end up like this guy if I'm not careful on the internet, in the age of the internet.
Yeah.
You know, I could be that hateful guy that just criticizes the internet all the time and then never just, like, does anything.
Deeper and deeper.
And never does anything about it. Yeah. And I was like, I gotta be more positive and I gotta be, not that I have to, it's not toxic positivity, but it's just like believing that things are going to get better.
And it's like, if you see that as a positive world, that's what you will build and work towards.
Yeah. Yeah. And I want to preface, like, that's so much harder to do.
Yes.
That's so fucking hard to do. And I don't want to, because I'm talking like I have it all figured out.
We're figuring it out right now.
But I don't, like, I'm saying all this with excitement now because I'm discovering it.
Yeah.
And
this is like the checkpoint of films about you right now.
Yeah, I want to make films about this stuff. My next film is about discovering your potential, which is like more optimistic, you know, and less like it's acknowledging like, yeah, there are fucking problems with the world. There are maybe I can't understand what you're going through and whatever, but like, the answer isn't to just be
wallow,
sink deeper. Yeah. And like wallow in your whatever. It's to move forward with optimism and kindness, which can be very hard for specific people, you know, and it's the battle. Yeah, and I still have things that I need to deal with, because I think all of this optimism and all of this setting boundary stuff also comes with like building a routine, like doing things that are maybe a little bit uncomfortable. Like I'm thinking about, you know, my sister who is really having an amazing time in New York City right now. And I really admire what she's doing, because she has an internship in New York City. You could just stay in this fucking like 5 by 5 foot room.
You know?
Because the rooms in New York City are fucking tiny.
Yeah.
You could stay in this room, be a shy person, not go out, not mingle with anybody, go to work, come back, go to work, come back. But my sister, the minute she got to New York City, she dropped all her stuff, had dinner with my parents. Next day, went outside, took a stroll around New York City, looked at all the vintage stores that she could find, because she wants to start thrifting and she loves shopping. And then she looked at the gyms. She took some. She took 2 free passes from gyms.
You gotta do that immediately. Yeah,
she was like testing out
smart
the gyms.
Girl.
And then she took 2 free dancing classes because she wants to learn how to do hip hop and she wants to learn dancing. And then now her boyfriend's here, and then they just went kayaking and like in the Hudson River, and like that's like taking ownership
of your
over
life.
Your life.
Yeah,
of your life.
That's beautiful.
And it's stuff that I realize that I have to do when I'm in New York City, because you might not be around here all the time for me to hang out with.
Yeah.
Or like, you know, my friends might not be around here all the time. Like, what am I want to do? And so she's got me thinking about what I want to do. I was like, maybe I want to go to art galleries. Maybe I should do dancing classes, or I should go to a chess club or something like that. I should not be afraid to kind of do these things.
I will say that I think it can take time, because it's crazy to me, because like this time last year, like May of last year, I was moving out of your mom's house and just like doing stuff like this, where I would stay at, like, I would sublease my friends' places for as long as I could. And I felt like I was like alone in the city. And so I did have more times where I'm just like trying to push myself to go out and like literally like reaching out to people to like make videos on, or just like kind of forcing myself to get out. But now it's crazy, because I can just like schedule like a whole week of activities and like see all these different people. But it did take me like the comparison from like that time where I was just like literally forcing myself out. Like my mom called me and she was like, Amory, you're in New York City right now. Like, what are you doing? Like just staying in the apartment. It can take time, but it's like you can definitely get there. So if you're just like, if you are that opposite end of the spectrum, it's definitely hard. And I'm like, it took me a year to like fully be able to just like do something every single day if I want to.
Yeah, I guess at the end of the day, it's just on you.
Yeah, completely.
I was also thinking about you along with my sister, because you're like, go to a kava bar and then like I like meet people there, or like even like you casually talking to people at like when you're buying cannabis or like you're buying weed and stuff like that. I'm like, man, I think that's also like a feminine energy too. I don't know, because I know a lot of manly people are like, I don't need help.
That's kind of the thing.
I don't need to ask people to be my friend.
That I think is the beauty of being independent in the city. Yeah. It's like you can actually have all these amazing connections and conversations with so many different people, but you have to be open to that too. Like you have to be in a certain vibration or a certain frequency to even do that. Because it's like a lot of the time when people are just purchasing something, they're like, oh, this is a transaction. It's like, you are a robot to me, but it's really never the case. Like it's always like a real person that you can genuinely like connect with. And if you can, it just makes like, that's the beauty of even looking for signs and synchronicities in like the universe. I feel like it just makes like everything a better place.
Yeah.
And more beautiful place.
Yeah. So thinking about things more optimistically.
Yeah. And I think maybe even for artists, that's hard. And it is the answer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
For artists. Completely. Oh, people think it's like, I want to talk about this in this Isaiah podcast maybe, but like I think we're moving out of a time where the conversation was just nothing matters. Like the conversation was just like, life sucks. Look at the internet. Look how it's fucking over our kids. Look how World War II happened. Like,
this is the metamodernism. Russia,
Russia, China. Like, we're never going to get better as the human race. We got like the George Floyd stuff. We got COVID. Like, the world's racist. Like, it's like the world is fucked.
Yeah.
But I think we're moving out of the conversation of like just the conversation ends at the world is fucked. Where now it's like, yeah, I understand. The world is a screwed up place. Like, I get it. But like, let's be kind.
Yeah.
You know, in a world that is fucked up, let's be kind and let's figure it out together, you know? And because nothing matters, because you're on this like rock for such a small period of time, and what happens after you die, like maybe that doesn't matter to you, but because nothing matters, like everything actually does matter. Like every second that you spend with your friends, like it matters. Every second that you spend even like just strolling, like taking a stroll around the park, like that should be appreciated. You know, the simplest things, like even in like everything everywhere, it's like laundry and taxes can, with the person that you love, can matter.
And that's why I like Rick Rubin's book too. It's like the creative act. It's literally like your life can be art.
Yeah.
If you look at it that way.
It's a way of living.
Yeah.
It's not an occupation.
Yeah. That's how I see my life. And he made a book and I was just like, wow, this is so beautiful.
That book, there's something magical about that book. Like there is like a, I've never seen, or I'm not a reader, but I've never seen a book like emit so much energy.
Wait, we should do The Artist's Way next. You should check it out.
Artist's Way?
Yeah.
Okay.
You need to. Because he models it kind of after that book too.
There's something about that book. It's like, now that I look at it, it's like there's energy coming out of it.
Yeah, wow.
You know, and it's just like attaching itself to the people that are, you know,
because like
crazy.
Everyone who's reading it too is like taking stuff away from it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Even if you're not an artist.
Yeah.
You don't have to be an artist to, you don't have to have that as an occupation to want to at least strive to, I don't know, live like one, or I don't know.
Okay. To recap the last, I'm really trying to manifest a conversation with you and Steezy to talk about that would be metamodernism. So that's going to be a sneak peek into that, but we'll save that in hopes for that conversation.
Isaiah would fucking love to talk about that.
Yeah,
shit.
I would love to watch you guys talk about that shit. So let's go back to Avatar, because you've really connected to the show. How did you come across it again? And like
YouTube,
because it keeps popping up for me in my world. Like I literally saw a guy with like an Avatar shirt, and I'm just like, oh, I keep thinking about the lightning episode because there's so much symbolism and metaphor in that, and they talk about a lot of spirituality.
It's so beautiful.
They talk about winter solstice and like summer solstice, and I'm like usually the only person who talks about that in my friend group. So I'm just like, wow, this show. Like I really recommended a good show.
I also searched it up on like Google, and it has 100% on Rotten Tomatoes. I'm like, yeah, that shit deserves 100% on Rotten Tomatoes.
Wow.
Like, because I rewatched it, you know, now as a full-time artist, which is fucking wild, as a full-time artist and a storyteller.
Yeah.
Watching that show, I was like, how could you fit all of these complex ideas into a kid's show? It's so beautiful. And I think it's coming up more and more now. It's got to be because, you know, there's more Avatar stuff coming out.
Okay.
We're living in this weird age in movie making right now where everything is kind of boring. Yeah, everything is a prequel or a sequel. Everything is like a live action version of a popular animation in the 2000s. Like everything that is being made right now has already existed as a popular thing before, and they're just remaking it. And it's kind of boring. Avatar, The Last Airbender, is the only, and I hope that the production studios don't ruin it, but Avatar, The Last Airbender is the only show / world that is present. I don't give a shit about Marvel. I don't give a shit about DC Universe. I don't really care about the Avatar, the blue people, but I want to see the world that they build with Avatar, The Last Airbender, and how they expand. What does the next Avatar look like? You know, and they play around with like such complex ideas like politics and like nations, which can be representative of like the country, the powerful countries of today, like,
yeah,
and how they handle situations, you know, and how you have to walk a fine line. And like, I think that's why I like it, because it's so real, you know. And also just on like, I also just love Zuko, the character,
because I can relate to. Prince.
He's the prince got banished.
Yeah.
And then became the fire lord. I love him because he is like me.
Hmm.
He was the angry guy. He was the guy that thought that he needed to be this angry, powerful firebender to restore his honor, to please his dad, and to please the Fire Nation. And he goes on this journey where his dad banishes him, and he has this trauma of being a part of the royal family. And you could see that he has this anger within him. He's like, and this toxic masculinity in the first two seasons of The Last Airbender. And you could see how that slowly transitioned, and like Uncle Iroh is like, who is more of a father figure than his actual father, guided him and was like a son to him towards the right direction of what a firebender actually should be, you know? And I was like, that's me. Like, I was the angry kid too. You know, I tried to please my dad, and I tried to please the world around me and try to fit in. And I wanted, like, you know, and I was, even in college, I was an angry kid. You know, I was like, I need to prove to my parents, and I need to prove to the world around me that I could be the greatest filmmaker of all time. I could get a 4.0 GPA, Dean's List. I could prove all this stuff.
Mm.
And I did, but I was like angry while doing it. And to see this fictional character in a kid's show go through a similar journey, I was like, that is like, I love the world that Avatar has built, but I specifically love Zuko, the character. And then to see in The Legend of Korra, he's old now. He's like in his 90s, and he's got his pet dragon that he didn't have. And like, he's a completely different man. He's like a calmer dude. And I need to print out a picture of 15, 16-year-old Zuko, this angry kid, and a picture of 90-year-old Zuko. I need to put that on my wall.
That's beautiful.
You know, because it's like, I want to be like that when I grow older. Like, I want to be like Zuko when he's 90, you know. And that's what I'm striving to become. Or like Uncle Iroh, you know. So I'm making all these realizations this time around as a 22-year-old watching a kid's show about these characters. And I mean, on that note too, like I've been trying to collect all these characters that I really admire, in media in general. Like I'm trying to, Waymond is another example of someone that like I would like to aspire to become. And then you got Zuko, I got Uncle Iroh as well. I have a whole list, but there are characters now that I aspire to become.
Okay, I think it's really interesting that you said like, oh, Zuko is doing all these things and he became angry. Or you said in your childhood, you were like, I could get good grades. I could like do all this stuff. Mm-hmm. I wonder if that's translating to your adult life where you're like, you're excelling in business. You're doing the business thing. You're doing like all these other things where it's like, what is the true thing that you want to focus on? I don't know if that's like relevant.
Yeah. Yeah.
You also said like Uncle Iroh was like the guide, like the sun guiding, just like the language that you use was like literally so beautiful. I think you at first I was like, oh, did he mean uncle? But you said son. And I'm like, I wonder if you meant the sun, but I think it was.
No, like Uncle Iroh, like that's what the character that was guiding.
Yeah.
Zuko, as if Zuko was like his own son.
Okay. Okay, the way that you said it, it was literally like as if it was a sun, like the light sun, though. Yeah. It was like kind of extremely poetic. Okay, and then it's interesting because a lot of the time when I watch, like I don't watch like a lot of YouTube, mm-hmm. I feel, and I don't often like feel like I can really engage in TV or movies. And then recently I think I've started like trying to more, and like I watched Everything Everywhere All at Once for the second time in a movie theater by myself, and I was like, wow, it was emotionally moving. And even yesterday I was with Nick and she was watching SWAT and I was like stressed out by the TV show. Mm-hmm. So I think you also helped me understand the importance of like art, because you really see yourself and you seem to be like changed by these characters that you see in these shows. Sure. Yeah, so like who else, you kind of already mentioned like Waymond and like Zuko, but do you have any other characters that you like aspire to be?
Yeah. There's,
or like are inspired by
off the top of my head. So, Waymond, I think I described this because of his soft energy.
And power.
And he's the most powerful guy, you know. Zuko, because I can relate to him a lot as a kid. And then there's this other guy. There's this guy from The French Dispatch. He's like this old, old man. It's a Wes Anderson movie called The French Dispatch, which is inspired by The New Yorker, which is the real magazine, you know. And it's a very beautiful, artistic magazine. And in The French Dispatch, very briefly, maybe overall has like 15 minutes of screen time, maybe 10 minutes of screen time. Mm-hmm. And this character played by Bill Murray, I think it's Sir Arthur Howitzer Jr., something like that. I don't know. But he's the head honcho of The French Dispatch, this magazine that is very popular. It's like I think it was like 500,000 subscribers to the magazine of The French Dispatch. And you might, when you watch the movie, you might not think anything of him. He's only on screen for 10 minutes. He's like, the main idea isn't even about him. But there's this very specific thing that Wes Anderson does. And I think I'd like to think that that's what he was trying to strive for. But it's like, the businessman, that is actually an artist. Mm. The guy that runs a very successful business, but he favors and he like champions, tries to put the art first. Mm. And you could see it within like the subtleties of like Bill Murray's acting. Like, he'll be very stern and stiff with like the data people, mm-hmm. and with like the, and then it's like so beautiful. Like it's so subtle too, because Wes Anderson movies, they talk so quickly, mm-hmm. and they're like, we only have this amount of paper and we don't have enough money and we need this amount of, we need to cut some stories. And he's like, nobody's cutting anybody's stories. We're buying more paper. We're cutting advertisements. And it was like such a quick decision of like art first, then the business, then the money. But it's art first. And he's like, we're not cutting anybody's stories. Buy more paper, less advertisements, go. you know. And then the other thing, there was like another scene where like he was reading the story of one of his journalists, and you could see the journalist as like the pure artist that he's trying to protect. And like the journalist is like, he's reading the journalist's paper and he's like reading it. And then he's also like looking at the money that she spent, like while going on this, journey to kind of write her papers. And he's like, you spent money on a desk? He's like, why is this desk like not good enough? And she was like, don't ask me why I needed another desk. She's like, I just wanted another desk. She's like, and he was like, you also bought like this hotel. Like, why did you need this hotel? She's like, because I needed it to write. And he was like, fine. If that's what you need to do. And like, he's like so protective over the artists making stuff, mm-hmm. you know? That was another character that I really admired, because like, I would like to be like that too. I would like to be, especially in creator camp, I would like to be the guy that prioritizes art in a world, and that not, I feel like, because there's also like some sort of savior maybe complex there, which I don't want that to be the case, but like, I want to be that guy that like looks out for the artists, you know, and like make sure that the businessmen, like, they don't try to manipulate them, you know, and make sure that people have a safe space to create. And it's also for myself too, you know, because I'm an artist as well. Like, those people, you know, like Isaiah, you know, Tanner, Cameron, Aaron,
yeah,
those are my people, you know. And so Sir Arthur Howitzer Jr., I believe is his name. That was another character that I have that I need to print out and put on my wall as well.
And you mentioned that you want to be that person even on YouTube for other people to see.
Yeah. And I don't, it's not even that like I wanted to. It's just like that's how it ended up to be. That's just how that's just how it came to be, you know. And it's funny because like I've always wanted to be a teacher or a professor.
Professor Aang.
Some sorts. I don't know if I like that. I'll just embrace it. I'll just embrace it at this point, because so many, it's just a joke that, you know, people call me professor. But I would like to, that's what I would like to do in the future, you know, maybe when I'm done with this filmmaking stuff, like teach at a university or something. Or
yeah,
like
I could totally see that.
You know, or like be that person for the kids that maybe needed it, you know, because, you know, in college is such a transitional period in your life and you're still very vulnerable, you know, or even being a high school teacher. I don't know.
Me substitute teaching, I'm just like, I need to do this again. Like, I need to do this the next school year.
Yeah. So it's like so fucking cool. And that's what I would like to do in the future. And I guess I'm blessed enough to have found it and to do it now too, because like, that's just kind of where the universe has guided me towards, you know. It's like I'm making art, but I'm making it in such a way where I'm still teaching people things, like very directly teaching people things, because I'm implementing things that I've seen in my favorite movies, techniques that I've seen in my favorite movies, and I'm creating it. I like to think that I'm creating it in an artistic way, but also, it is also an educational tool. Mm-hmm. It is not only an art piece, but it also teaches you something, and vice versa. You know, it's not just an educational piece. It's a piece of art where if you could rewatch it 2-3 times and see the subtleties and like see the filmmaking techniques and use it yourself, you know? So it's an interesting thing that I'm still figuring out, but that's where take my YouTube channel is, maybe to show people a more artistic approach to the creator industry where you don't have to, you know, sell your soul or try and play the YouTube algorithm and worry about watch time and click through rate in order to succeed. You don't, cause you don't have to, you literally don't have to think about those things to succeed. But that's all the narrative is right now on YouTube. That's all it is. You know, they've done, and like people like Colin and Samir and like Mr. Beast, they have done a great job of covering that area of the creator industry, but that's the only conversation being had right now. And I'd like to start a new one.
I have, okay, well, maybe let's go to New Wave and see if there are any new developments since the last time we spoke on that.
Yeah. I'm just worried that it's gonna, people are gonna turn it into a business, or people are gonna turn it into, because it I'm starting to see its success. There's like people, like there's like 1,000 videos on the New Wave.
Wow. That is a wave.
Which is fucking
That's
wild.
That's crazy. I didn't know that.
There's like 1,000 people on the New Wave, and you know, people are putting the New Wave in the front of their videos or putting the hashtag in their videos, and it's really awesome. But I'm worried that it's, the whole point of it was to encourage people to find their own path. But I'm worried that it's just going to be another genre on YouTube. Now you're just like Mr. Beast. Now you are just like, it is not the New Wave. It is a coming of age genre. Because the majority of the creators in the New Wave right now, they're making like documentaries and vlogs about their life, you know? And that's awesome. But that's not what I meant by the New Wave.
So what did you mean by the New Wave? Because that's the,
be yourself, build your world, figure it out yourself. You can make a living on YouTube, or you can make art on YouTube that is not driven by the analytics or driven by a genre, you know? Because right now, it's not even click-through rate and watch time at this point. It's like, well, you got to find your niche, you know? And what it feels like on YouTube right now is, and I think it's great, it's starting to improve from the speedy TikTok-paced content, like trying to be more optimistic about that, you know? But the I think the narrative right now on YouTube is like, it's not even about watch time or click-through rate. It's about, if you're a carpenter, like, and you get 1 million views on a carpentry video, YouTube shakes your hand and is like, congratulations. You make, you carve wood on YouTube. You make beautiful furniture using wood on YouTube. And the minute that you talk about your wife, I'm gonna take that away from you. You know, I'm gonna take the views and your living away from you now, because you're talking about your wife. I didn't hire you to talk about your wife. I put you in the algorithm so that you could carve wood, you know? And the New Wave is kind of like, no, no, no. Like Anne-Marie, an unemployed millennial, is its own genre. And you could build a world where you don't have to follow at, not that it's bad to become a carpenter or to become, you know, a game show host like Mr. Beast. If that's what you want to do, go ahead and do it. But if what you wanted to do was build a personality on YouTube, if what you wanted to do was tell personal stories and make art on YouTube, like, you need to do it on your own terms, which means that you can't look at the numbers, which means that you can't look at the click-through rate. You should be making the thumbnails that you enjoy. You should be having the conversations that mean the most to you. And through that, and through understanding yourself over the course of like 2 to 3 years, then you get to a place where you can potentially make a living from just being you. That, I think, was what I meant in terms of New Wave for YouTube.
Yeah, I love that.
I did not mean that you should film your life and be a coming of age vlog YouTuber, but it seems like, and if Colin and Samir ever watch this or whatever, like, that's not what the new wave is. Because I know that's the conversation that's being pushed around, is like people filming things about their life, being sad, and then being happy. And then
a deep convo.
And then like, you know, I'm dropping out of school, or like I'm going on an adventure. That's just another genre. That's just that's the coming of age genre. Awesome. We created a genre. But that's not why, that's at least for me, that's not why I wanted to make, that's not why I started the YouTube New Wave. So where I'm at with that is I'm just worried that people think that it's a genre and are starting to box it in, which is not what I wanted it to be.
This is where I think you need to, like, you need to, because you see the world for this more than I think anyone, and I love this world that you're building, but I have also seen that kind of, like, I think people,
you know what I'm talking
about, right? I know exactly what you're talking about, but I think this is where you need to, like, come on or, like, speak about it in podcasts, or, like, you need to define it how you see it, and then if that fits, if the people making in the wave, like, are making that type of content, then they can, like, they could be a part of it. But I think it's like kind of defining the boundaries of like what you see it as. Cause I think you're building, like, that is a beautiful description to me.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a new wave of making videos. Yeah. It's like a new form of making videos that is not driven by
an algorithm. And as soon as it becomes like a category, it's just like, you're kind of doing the exact same thing.
You're playing the game. Yeah. Now. That's not why I wanted to do it. You know,
like, that makes so much sense.
The Emery videos, if it's just, if that's what you want it to be, what you want it to be is an Anne-Marie video or an Anne-Marie podcast, then it should not try and be like, you know, Joe Rogan's thing. Or like, I think that's what I was trying to say with the new wave. And like,
I think even that is a very helpful differentiator.
Yeah.
Because when you describe it, I'm like, oh, yes, I love this. And then it does kind of get muddled and confusing when you see, like, the actual videos. Like, if you try to do research, you're like, okay, so what is it exactly?
Yeah. 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 And then, like, it also goes layers deeper, because past that, I also think that YouTube is bringing a whole new way of creating to filmmaking, right? Where you can use your iPhone and where you could use your photo booth camera on your laptop, and you could, like, you know, use things in your home, like rearrange furniture in your room to, like, you know, make some cool shit, you know. I also think that's the new wave. I also think that, like, vlogging as an art form can be the new wave, but, like, that's 5 years from now.
Yeah.
You know, right now it's like, let's try and be ourselves.
Yeah. Know? I love that. My last podcast was with Megan Klein, and we talked a lot about feminine energy, and she related it a lot to business. And then I appreciated that she related it to creating too. Mm-hmm. And she said, like, a lot of the last few years we've been operating in a very masculine era.
Yeah.
Like, she gave the example of, like, the pandemic. It's like, they are using data. They're telling you what to do. And she believes, or her astrologer believes, that we are entering the age of, like, divine feminine, which is actually kind of exactly what you described the new wave to be. It's like using your own intuition, ignoring the metrics and the data and the algorithm, and just fully leaning into, like, what you believe or what you think is interesting and what you want to portray. That kind of is the feminine ascension, I guess.
I think so, yeah. And it's exciting, you know? And at this point in my career, I've been making YouTube videos for 3 years now. I'm at a point where I'm just like, fuck it. Like, my last magic trick, I've tried everything. Like, and I'm not saying this. I like to think that I'm not saying this with an ignorant mindset. I've tried the analytics route.
Yeah.
I've gone viral with the analytics route. I've spoken to so many people about this thing. It's my life. Like, I like wake up, I think about it, I eat it, you know, like, it's my fucking life. So And now at this point in my life, it's like I've reached my last magic trick. The last magic trick that I can learn, which is, I'm gonna wait for that to go. The last magic trick in my life, which is to be myself. Mm. That's it. Like, that's all I got.
Wow.
You know, is to be myself, to set my boundaries. I know my potential. And I've also accepted that in the most optimistic way possible, that it might not work out and I might yeah. never get a job.
Yeah.
And that's okay.
And I feel like that's also just meeting exactly where you are and where you need to be.
Yeah.
Okay. One thing, this is probably the last topic that I'll touch on before okay. asking the last question. At Creator Camp, we all did a, what's it called? Stand-up?
Oh, improv.
Improv.
Yeah.
And one of the improv activities was yes and yeah. you said that you were using that for your method of creation, and then you shared that with me, and then I think it's really helpful for maybe overthinkers or artists.
Yeah.
Can you talk about how you did that, the ambiance of New York, Brooklyn? Yeah. And can you, I'm sure it's also carried into other avenues of your life. I think it's also just kind of like a more optimistic way of creating.
It's just like get up and go, you know, like, yeah. So I actually realized that there might also be flaws to the yes and okay. thing too.
Talk to me.
But the Rick Rubin book solved it for me.
Okay.
Which walk is fucking me through sick, that development. Which is fucking like the best thing ever. You know?
The universe is providing.
Because I like found that. And then I found this thing.
Yeah.
And then now I got to this thing. So we did improv at Creator Camp. Just to get everyone loosened up and stuff like that. Because the event afterwards was the 90-minute film festival mm-hmm. where you had to make a film in 90 minutes. It could be a minute long. It could be 30 seconds long. But I thought that was very, very fun. I thought it was the best thing that we did at the event.
I agree. But, and you guys should continue doing that.
Yeah.
And also compile them and like have it on a website or something to show the development of that.
But the yes and thing was perfect as a starter point because to explain it, basically what we did was we maybe had a group of like 20 people in each group, and the improv leaders, the guys that we kind of got to come and do the improv stuff, they set up 10 chairs. So half the group sat in the chairs and the other 10 were the crowd. So we were just watching. And she's like, okay, I am the CEO of a skateboard company. And we're trying to come up with the next great skateboarding idea. You know, give me some ideas. And basically, the gist of the game is that you can't say no to an idea. So it's like, well, what if we had square wheels on the skateboard? And everyone's like, yes, yes, I love that idea. And maybe we should have a rocket launcher on the back. And everyone's like, yes, yes, I love that idea. And it just keeps going and spiraling. And I remembered that specific idea went to like, what if we had a kitchen in the back of the skateboard and like a grandma that cooked us food while we were skating, you know? And then it was like, and then it was so funny because Aiden was like, guys, I think we should scrap all of the ideas that we just came up with. And everyone had to go like, yes, that's a great idea, you know? And it was so funny, and it was so like, I didn't realize at the time that it was so useful until 4 hours later when we did the 90-minute film festival. And I was in a group with my friend Tanner, Stay, and Natalie, if you guys know.
The filmmakers.
Natalie Lynn. And they're Tanner and Natalie and myself. I guess in the community, you could see us.
Wait, can
us
you add their names? So if people actually wanted to like look.
Okay, yeah. At Natalie Lynn, at Wicked Stew, at Rachel and Stay.
Okay.
Or Stay and Rach. At Stay and Rach. S-T-E and Rach. You could spell Rach.
I'll link it somewhere.
Yeah, you could link it somewhere. Or you could put it on the fucking.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah. But, We did a 90-minute film festival, and you would think, like, everyone was looking at our group and they're like, if you don't win this, I don't know what you're doing if you don't win this, you know, because you guys are all filmmakers. Like, and I was like, you might think that, like, but Natalie spends 4 months working on her videos. Mm. Tanner spent half a year working on his last video. Yeah. And I spend months on mine. So, yeah, like,
that's funny.
To make something in 90 minutes, we're actually, like, a hindrance to each other.
Yeah. Wow. That's funny.
We ran into a room. We got our... And to add on to the challenge, it's, like, you needed to make the film with different items. So, we had a plunger, Hot Wheels car, and a deck of cards. And we're like, what the fuck do we do with, like, these things? And we're like laying it out on the table. And we're like, this makes zero sense. This is so like, and then we're like, must have spent 10, 15 minutes trying to come up with an idea. And I was like, fuck it. Let's just film something. And then I just had, like, Tanner pull his pants down. Because we had a plunger. So I had, like, Tanner pull his pants down and, like, do some funny shit. Like,
I don't remember that part of it.
Need to watch it again. On the video. I don't think it ended up in the video. Because we had a plunger and we were in a bathroom. So we were like, what if we did something funny? And then all of a sudden it started going, you know, it started going, and I was like, yes. And then Stay was like, what if the plunger chased Tanner around? What if it was a monster? What if it's
okay?
And
I was
like, what if
one,
we did a horror film? I'm like, yes, that's a great idea. And I'm like, how about the cards? And it was like, Natalie was such a shy person. She was so into, she was so into the idea, and she was like, I'll act too. And then, and Natalie would never fucking do this. She actually, like, she actually chose not to do the improv thing because she was so shy. Sorry.
I was scared, really uncomfortable. Yeah. And what I said was really stupid.
No, but it was like, that's kind of what you need to kind of let out. You know?
Yeah.
But Natalie was scared of that. But all of a sudden she was so into this thing. And Stay was like, what if we played goldfish? We were playing goldfish and Tanner needed to go to the bathroom. And like, and we're like, yes. And then when Tanner goes to the bathroom, we hear sounds of him getting beaten up by the plunger, and he like opens the door and the plunger kind of sucks him into the toilet. And then what if the plunger starts chasing Natalie and Stay around, and then like it became this whole funny thing, and we had by the end of the 90 minutes we had this very funny horror film with a plunger that killed three friends while they were playing Go Fish. And it was so fucking dumb, but it was the funniest thing. And the video is out somewhere.
Now you're going to have to link it.
Yeah.
So how have you taken that to your channel?
It inspired me and motivated me so much because I was like, damn, I overthink my ideas so much.
Mm.
And it hit me and realized that sitting and overthinking and staring at a blank screen is not creating. It's not even art. That is just insecurity.
Mm.
You know, that is just your insecurities taking control of you. And you need to control that. And that might come with coming up with the dumbest ideas first. And then it'll spiral into something that is more meaningful over time. But you have to get started. And if you can't think of anything, then it's not worth it to just sit there and stare at a blank screen. It's more useful to go for a walk or to go to sleep or to exercise. And your subconscious is going to work its way through.
Yeah.
And it's so scary because the world around you tells you that you have to force things. That is America. That's like capitalism.
Yeah.
You know? Capitalism is so like, don't fucking trust the universe.
Mm.
I need strict data to know where my audience is. I need to know that the S&P 500 is going to like take me to the moon, you know? I need to have strict data to know how to succeed. And it is so not what art is. It is so what not the universe is. You need to trust it. And I think a lot of, at least for me personally, a lot of the sitting and thinking and forcing it maybe does come from the culture that we grew up in, now that I think about it. And it's much more useful to go for a walk and trust that your subconscious is working it out, or to yes and to the idea. And with my last video, even though I'm not super proud of it because I rushed the ending, I'm very proud of it in that I made it in 7 days. Mm-hmm. And it's a pretty damn good video for like 7 days. And the only reason why I was able to do it because I yes anded to the end product.
Yeah, I think my last video was that my last video, I had like this idea of breakup season. And then I was kind of blocked on it. And you were just like, what if you just like yes anded yourself? And then it's literally just like talking to yourself then. You're just like, you bring up this one idea and then you're like, yes, and also this is just like the next thought that I had. Yeah. So it's like starting with like a blank canvas and just like allowing yourself to like go there.
Yeah. But I realized that's great and all.
Oh yeah, what was the limitation?
The limitation there is the idea just might not be good.
Yeah.
You know? Like, you might yes and to a shit idea.
Yeah, you might paint an ugly ass.
Yeah, yeah. Painting. So then what's the solution there? Then I read Rick Rubin's book. Well, the solution is so fucking simple. It's just to try different things. Mm-hmm. You shouldn't be sitting and staring at a paper and overthinking things, but you also shouldn't think of one idea and just go with that one. You know, if you look at it and it's not actually a good idea, then like, it's like I looked at it like a tree, you know, with different branches. Mm. It's like you have the core theme of the idea. The core theme is breakup season. Now what's the story around the theme, right? Well, you have the trunk. Maybe you could do this thing. Oh, maybe that doesn't work. Maybe. And then one of them is going to lead to like a fruit or something like that. That is like,
that's beautiful.
That's the way to go. That's the route to go. So with my last video, I was so proud of my last video because what I did was I sat myself down. And I just, all I did for hours a day, I had a notebook and I had my laptop. I was like, what if I did this? I was thinking that maybe I should do this idea. I don't think I should do this idea because of this thing. And I don't think I should edit like this because of this thing. And I was like, okay, the best option is to go with this option because of this, and this. And then all of a sudden I was like, I knew why I was making these decisions, and I was making the best decisions, and I wasn't just sitting and staring at a blank screen anymore. Mm. I was working through it. And if I was stuck on a sentence, it's because I was working through like the poetry of it. I was working through the wording of it. And I wasn't just staring at a blank screen with no ideas. I had ideas. I was just needed to toy around with it, you know? And so it was the improv class added on top of Rick Rubin's ideas of finding the best ideas that led me to, I think that now I'm finally, before all this, since I was 12, making videos since I was 12, like the first 10 years of my filmmaking content creation life was dedicated to, I realized I didn't know what I was doing.
Yeah.
And now I still don't know what I'm doing, but I finally understand what certain things are now. Like, I'm like, now I know why I'm making a decision. Whereas before, I just made a decision because I thought it was cool. But even if you think it's cool, like, why do you think it's cool?
Yeah.
Well, because this has never been done before. And understanding why you did something and moving forward and not getting stuck and trusting the universe, that is such a wild discipline that I had just started to learn with this last video.
Wow. I feel like it's like in every avenue of life, you have to learn all the rules so that you can know which rules you can break, you know?
Yeah. And I just started.
Yeah. That's how I'll be on YouTube for 11 years in January. With my Amory Chase channel. Isn't that crazy? Yeah. And I kind of feel like I'm at the same place. Like, I'm like, okay, I understand this now. And I understand like what I want to do and like what I've like learned the rules. And I'm like, okay, I don't need to follow these rules. Like, which rules do I need to follow?
Yeah. Yeah. And And you do have to go through the shitty, maybe you do have to go through the shitty times where you think you have to follow the algorithm.
Yeah, I think so. I think it's all part of the process.
Yeah.
Okay, my last question for you today is, what manifestations do you want to put out into the universe?
Hmm. Can you want to go first?
No.
manifestations that I'm putting out into the universe currently.
Yeah.
I guess I said it already. It's like, I want to be an artist.
Yeah.
You know? And I want to, it's so fucking simple, but I just want to, it's so simple, okay? But I just want to have control over my life. And in that, in return, that'll make me happy.
Wow.
Like, you know, I want to have control. I want to not feel like the businesses and YouTube own me.
Yeah.
Right now, they still do own me.
Mm.
You know, right now, I still have to stay up until 3 a.m. working on a video when I don't want to. But I hope that after this next video, I can start on that journey by searching for places to stay in New York City. Here, maybe.
I think you'd like this place a lot.
You know, setting my boundaries with the businesses so that I could focus on my videos and by spending time with people that want to pursue the same thing that I want to pursue. I think that's what I want to manifest.
Yeah.
Honestly, I just want to be like, I don't know, like, is it like, it's so simple, but it's like, I just want to be happy, you know?
That is actually what I always wish for when I have to wish for anything. I'm like, happiness.
Yeah. That's what I'm working towards right now.
Yeah.
And there are things that I'm very happy about right now that I've realized all these things, but I still get anxious because like YouTube still definitely does own my life, you know? And whenever my manager texts me about an integration, that business owns my life for the month that I have to make the video, you know, especially as an artist where you, every frame means something to you and you want to make every frame the best it could possibly be. Then to like, to have a business go like, I want that to be done in a month.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not even a thing that you like. So those are things that I'm actively working through right now so that I can fully embrace that artist lifestyle. Yeah. Manifesting discipline and yeah. I told you like several weeks ago, I was just like pretty sad and miserable. I'd just come back from like a big business meeting and I was just not in a good mood. And I journaled. I was like, what would make me happy right now? What would get me out of this misery right now? And I was like, I couldn't think of anything. I was like, damn, is the world just this gray? Like, am I just this sad right now? Like, how the fuck do I get out of this? And I remembered that I just bought a drawing pad the day before and it just arrived. And I started drawing and testing things out. I had so much fun drawing. I woke up the next day with this like jolt of excitement and joy that I got to learn how to draw for my next video. You know, and then I got to learn, and this was a new addition to my world.
And it's sick. I feel like that's going to be like game changing for your videos.
Thank you. Yeah, I'm learning. And this is like kind of the first step and it's not perfect, but it's so exciting.
You should make like a playlist of the videos that you watch to learn how to do whatever you're doing. Cause it's kind of crazy.
Yeah. Yeah. I definitely will. But that is like the only thing I remember almost giving up writing that journal. Cause I just couldn't think of anything that would make me happy. And then I closed my journal and I was like, oh, wait a minute. The drawing made me happy. But like, let's dig a little bit deeper. Like, why did the drawing make me happy? Because it was like this new addition to my world. It's just like when I get happy when I buy a new shirt, or like when I get excited about, you know, changing thumbnails to my videos, because like, I understand what my world looks like now, you know? I realized that's what excited me. And I thought the whole time, and this is so wild, but like, I thought the whole time I was like, maybe a relationship would make me happier. You know,
I think that's a thing that a lot of people fall into too.
Yeah.
So they like will rush to get into
a girlfriend would make me happier right now because I'm just miserable by myself and I'm just lonely.
Yeah.
And then I started to go down that path of like, okay, drawing, building my world. That's what excites me. If I like it, and that's not too far away from now, you know, making the decision to cut off certain brand deals that I don't want to do, setting my boundaries with Creator Camp and making, letting them know that maybe I don't want to live with you guys, like, and to get my own place and to decorate my own place and to have ownership over my life and to exercise. And then that's when I started to figure out, I was like, oh, a relationship is not what actually would make me happy right now.
And you would be taking approaching
action
it.
In my own life.
Yeah.
Doing all those things would make me happy. I want to do more of those things. That's why I admire what my sister is doing.
Mm.
She's really good at it. And I don't think I was ever good at building my world.
Mm. Wow.
I don't think I'm good at it. So there's so many people. Jade, I think, is pretty good at it.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I think that... Yeah, I think my sister's really good at it. You know, she knows exactly what she likes. She knows exactly what she likes. And I really like appreciate that. Like, and I really admire that now. Well, like Tyler is like a master at it. He makes a living out of it, you know. Pharrell. Yeah. That's what I would like to do. I'm not naturally good at it, I don't think.
Yeah. I think it's because, like, I think maybe if you're focused on inner world a lot, like, it takes, like, a little while to, like, build the outer world.
Yeah.
Because I think you are very good at inner world. And I feel like that's kind of, like, where I live, like, a lot, too. If you're journaling all the time. Like, you journal a lot.
Yeah, yeah.
That's, like, an inner world thing.
Yeah.
I like how you said the relationship thing. Because, like, I feel like when I was, like, I don't know, early 20s, I was just, like, desperately, so desperate and wanted a relationship. But it wasn't until I started building my world and just like building the things around me. Mm-hmm. And then you're not coming at a relationship from a place of lack. It's just like you're full and whole.
And I don't know if I'm there yet.
Yeah.
You know? I don't know if I... Sometimes I still want a relationship just because I'm sad. But like, that's not good, you know?
Yeah. Just to like fill that hole.
Yeah.
That emptiness.
So... Yeah. Yeah, I think that I'm manifesting my world because I see it now. And it took me 3 years of struggling on YouTube to see it. And it's come so now. Just think about it. It's just come so naturally to my sister or like to certain people. You know, those people are really, those people grow YouTube channels really quickly.
Hmm.
But those people also might not understand how to handle emotions.
Yeah.
Because, and Elliot's a good example of someone that knows how to build a world, but I don't know if growing so quickly for him was actually good, you know?
Yeah. I think even he said that, like, it's...
Yeah.
It's like kind of like winning the lottery.
I'm so blessed. Like, sometimes I think I won the lottery because I'm still... I'm not at 1,000 subscribers struggling to like get one video to go viral.
Yeah.
But I'm at 100,000 subscribers for the last 3 years, 2 years. And I have an audience, decent sized audience that cares about me.
Yeah.
But I'm not big enough to have a fast paced life.
Yeah.
And I'm sitting in a lot of like, I sit in a lot of the pain of like, why am I not this? Why am I not that? And like, I'm so grateful because I get to work through all of that now when I'm 20.
Yeah. I do think for like the people who blow up when they're super young, early 20s, I'm just like, I actually I think I feel bad for that a little bit, because it's like you need to establish yourself as a person before, I think. Mm-hmm. I mean, not before, but it's like it's important to do both at the same time.
Yeah, for sure.
If you and if sometimes if you just grow too fast, you don't actually have the ability to do that.
Yeah, so I even think I'm lucky in that area.
I think so too, yeah.
And I was also talking to Stuart, who is the president of IMI. And he was telling me that, or I was telling him that, like, I was like, Stuart, because he's trying to, like, do a bunch of, like, grants and stuff like that. I was like, I actually think, no lie, like, I struggle so much. I basically went through every, like, crevice and every struggle that a YouTuber could go through in their 20s.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like I just know how to guide, like, or I feel like I know how to, like, lift people up out of ruts because I've been through it.
Yeah.
I've been through a lot of it. Not all of it. I don't, probably never going to get through all of it. But, like, you know, I figured it out.
Yeah.
Oh. A whole other synchronicity.
Okay.
I know this is going on for a long time. And this camera died.
Yeah, it died a long time ago. It's okay.
I started watching jujitsu videos.
Hmm.
And you're going to love this. You're going to fucking love this. I was like listening to Jocko Willink podcast. And he has a co-host, Echo Charles. And they're both black belts in jujitsu.
Hmm.
And it takes about 10, 12 years to get to a black belt in jujitsu. And they were saying a black belt, it's not about if you can beat this person or that person. I mean, for certain dojos, like, maybe that is the case. If you know, a brown belt can beat a black belt, then you should probably be a black belt. Or if a white belt can beat a yellow belt, then you should probably be a yellow belt.
Mm-hmm.
But for them, it's like, no. It's like, it's you against you. Your master will only give you the black belt if you are at your kind of fullest potential.
Mm.
So they were like, I even see that as a compliment that you're not getting your black belt fast enough.
Mm. Wow.
Because,
that's a beautiful way to look at it.
Right? Because your master thinks you could go further.
Yeah.
And you're not going further. He's like, there might be a 50-year-old that starts jujitsu, and maybe they're in their 60s when they get their black belt, because they reach their fullest potential at that point, at that age in their life.
Yeah.
But a 20-year-old who's been doing jujitsu for 2 years can probably destroy the 60-year-old with a black belt. But that's not what. But the 20-year-old that could destroy the black belt, 60-year-old black belt, like, that person might only be a blue belt. And they're not going to get their black belt because they could destroy a 60-year-old. You know?
Kind of going back to the lightning thing, the Zuko. It's like...
Yeah. I love that.
Yeah.
So, I don't even do jujitsu, but I was, like, listening to it. I was like, maybe I should give it a try. I don't want to get beaten up.
Yeah, me too. But someone's like DM me and be like, hey, I think you'd really like jujitsu. It's like a guy. And I was like,
it's like scary, but to see even that simple lesson of like, God's just given me a really important role.
Wow.
You know, like I don't even believe it. I don't even know if I believe in God, but like some sort of higher power. It's like, I'm here. I'm still here. Cause like, I'm still a brown belt. Cause like, I just got a more important role to play.
One time you said,
I got to learn more.
You were like, I think we've chosen like the hard path on YouTube.
It wasn't even we chose, like we're just given the hard path, but it's also awesome.
Yeah.
Too.
Yeah. You know? I agree.
That's why I needed to do this podcast. I feel like I needed to do this podcast to let all that out.
Yeah. I feel like we covered all the ground. I think if we do one with Isaiah, then
it would be much more about art and stuff like that, but basically it would have covered a lot of things that we learned from our last podcast.
Yeah.
Also, we have new haircuts.
Yes, we do.
Bangs, perm, shorter hair.
Next time we'll be building our world even more.
Yeah, I need to dress better too.
Me too, man.
This is all right. This is all right.
Yeah, I'm fine with this, but it could be better.
Yeah.
That's funny.
Yeah.
Okay, well, thank you for being on the Unemployed Millennial Podcast.
Thank you for having me.
I always love your updates and developments. You are truly, like, every single time I call you, I feel like you've made the most drastic change out of, like, anyone. So it's, like, fun to pour, like, love and energy into you.
Yeah.
Because you're exciting. You take it and, like, you go with it.
Can I also say, like, as like, on our friendship, like, I feel like we're kind of, like, some ways like an accountability partners
yeah.
for like life in yeah. general. And I don't know. It's just like, I feel like I could come to you and tell you about certain things like that I can't really tell other people within our community, you know? And like, you understand it and you hear it, like you can see it and it feels good, you know? So I appreciate that.
Thank you. I feel the same way. And it's like, I think it's always important to surround yourself who's with people who understand your reality and live in the same reality.
Yeah, for sure.
Because I think it's good to do both.
Suffocating.
Yeah.
If you're not.
It's very draining because I've lived in worlds where I'm just like, oh, we're not in the same reality. And I think it's important to like be able to exist, mm-hmm. but it's exhausting. So, yeah.
They've been staring at my feet the whole time.
Free feet. Okay. Thank you. Wow, Goodbye. That was 2 hours.
That was so fun, though.
Yeah, that was a great update.